time for the Million Pound Radio Show. And here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you. Thank you. Much better audience than the last show.
Oh, absolutely.
Good evening.
Good evening. Now, in tonight's show, we will be meeting the very enterprising property developer who sells timeshare villas in Beirut.
And we'll be discussing the independence of the BBC with the extremely talented, handsome and deep down quite gentle Norman Tebbit.
But before we proceed, Nick and I would just like to dissociate ourselves from this entire programme. Isn't that right, Nick?
Yeah.
Because against our wishes, the BBC have dictated that this programme is to be self-financing and as an experiment is to include commercials. Now, as artists, we feel this is degrading, don't we, Nick?
Degrading, yeah.
Neither of us would ever dream of being professionally associated with any advert, would we, Nick?
No.
And we feel that our creative integrity has been raped. And there, under protest, we have to take a break. And remember, these ads are nothing to do with us.
Hi, Gary. Haven't seen you for ages. What have you been up to?
I've got a job.
A job? Wow. How?
Thanks to Action for Jobs.
Action for Jobs?
Yeah. It's a scheme where the government find jobs for young unemployed actors playing young unemployed people in YTS adverts.
Sounds great.
Action for Jobs. It also provides work for unemployed voiceover artists.
As I said, that ad was nothing to do with us, except that Nick here seems to have done the voiceover for it.
Yeah? Well, I need the money, Andy. I'm badly out of pocket, you know. The BBC have queried my expenses. Can you believe that?
Queried your expenses?
Yeah.
Well, let's have a look. Okay. Mm. Travel. Tube fares, £20. Mm. Taxi fares, £20. All seems reasonable.
Yeah, I know.
What's this next one? I can't quite read. What's that word?
Let's see. Oh, Tahiti.
Tahiti?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they're querying, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, how else do they expect you to create great works of art? You need somewhere to get away from it all. Find somewhere quiet.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I bet Gauguin never had that problem when he went to Tahiti.
Well, you should tell them that.
I did, Andy. And do you know what they said? They said, who?
Oh, I don't know.
That's what we're up against, isn't it? Philistines. I mean, Gauguin, he wrote some brilliant stuff.
What's that last one?
Pub lunch for journalists.
£850.
Well, there was three of them.
Mm. Yeah. You got off quite lightly with that one, really, then, didn't you?
I know. And would the BBC pay it?
Outrageous.
Sometimes I wonder why we pay our licence fee.
Quite, yeah. Have you paid your licence fee?
Well, not in the literal sense, no. I've had a lot on and I haven't quite got round to it for the last 5 years or so.
I don't know how you could do that, you know, not pay it. I'd lie awake all night worrying. I lay awake all last night worrying.
Yeah?
Oh. What's wrong?
Oh, nothing.
You can go to sleep, eh?
Love, do you mind if I ask you something?
What?
Well, before me, you know, did you have any boyfriends?
Why do you ask?
Oh, just wondering.
Oh, I get it. You're worried about it, aren't you?
Oh, what are you talking about?
Well, eat. Eat. You know, eat.
Oh, that it. Oh, no, the thought never entered my head. I was just curious, that's all, you know.
Well, look, I had one boyfriend before you, and that was 11 years ago. There, happy?
No problem, sure. Good night. This boyfriend, what sort of bloke was he then?
You must know, he was a gay nymphomaniac who kept green monkeys.
What?
Of course he wasn't, Andy. Now, for God's sake, will you stop worrying obsessively and just get some sleep?
I do not worry obsessively.
No? Well, who was it who didn't sleep for 4 months worrying about Chernobyl?
Look, everyone worries about Chernobyl.
True, but not everyone goes round Dewhurst with a Geiger counter. Look. You were convinced you had radiation sickness and stood in front of the mirror every night counting your pubic hairs.
I was not counting them, I was combing them.
Go to sleep.
You worry as well? You worry about your feet being big.
go to sleep.
Anyway, they're not big. They're just not a conventional shoe size, that's
all. Yeah. All right. Okay. Night-night. Is the electric blanket off?
Yes.
At the wall?
Yes, see, it says off.
Good God, you've left the plug in the socket. Are you mad, woman?
Oh. There. Okay. It's out of the socket. Now go to sleep.
Could still burst into flames, though, if the wiring was faulty. I'd better switch off everything at the mains.
Oh, no, Andy, look, we've got a fridge full of food. It'll all go off, and then you could catch salmonella and die.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. Phew, that was a close shave.
Please, go to sleep now.
Right, yeah. I was reading this thing today. Did you know that parrots can carry a very dangerous disease called psittacosis?
Yes, but we haven't got a parrot.
True. But one could fly in through the window, couldn't it? Where's the yellow pages? Hang on.
Oh, God, what now?
Look, I'm going to ring up one of those firms that puts protective grills over the window, something parrot-proof.
It's 3 a.m. Besides, we've got bolts on all the windows.
But we've got nothing to stop the really determined parrot, have we? I mean, what if one flew in tonight? I mean, it might be infected and then... I mean, what would we do? Ow! Why'd you do that?
You were getting hysterical. Now listen, you're perfectly safe. You don't have to worry about parrots or anything else. Oh, you're like that children's story, Chicken Lickin'. Chicken Lickin' ran around in a panic all the time, convinced the sky was going to fall in.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, you're right, love. Very, very, very silly warrior, just like Chicken Lickin'. I'm sorry. Good night.
Good night.
The sky couldn't fall in, could it? And now, a commercial break.
Does your pocket computer memorise important telephone numbers and then ring them on command? No? The Zycon Organiser 2 does. Can your pocket computer remind you where you should be and sound an alarm whenever you're late for your next appointment? Can it completely plan your diary for you, arranging and rearranging your schedule? With the Zycon Organiser 2, you need never do your own forward planning again. The Zycon Organiser 2, it'll turn you into a complete mental cabbage.
Malt whiskey at only £1.20 a bottle. Givenchy perfume at just £1.35 a bottle. Sofa beds at a mere £8.39. Axminster carpets at a giveaway £12.50. Yes, with prices this good, this amazing, this incredible, it can only be stolen goods. Go see the bloke with the limp in the horse and groom, but keep your voice down now.
If you're a busy executive, you need the Zycon Organiser 3. The super advanced pocket computer that takes all the tedious brain work out of life. It will compose your memos for you, audit your accounts, pay your bills, fiddle your expenses, make fatuous conversation for you at dinner parties, tell your wife you love her, decide your views on nuclear disarmament, tell your wife you really love her honest, indulge in self-pity, worry about impotence, go bonkers with stress and have a nervous breakdown. The Zycon Organiser 3, for executives who want their thinking done for them.
Well, we're very pleased to have with us tonight on the show Anne Jenkins, who is, of course, Britain's number one ladies tennis player. Hello, Anne.
I did my best.
It's okay.
Well, I really did.
No, it's okay, Anne. You don't have to apologise for anything.
Well, I got to deuce in one game.
Yeah. Don't worry.
It was a very tough tournament, the Lapland Open.
Yes, look, Anne, relax. No one's criticising you, okay? Now, Anne, if I can ask you this. Why is it that Britain can't produce tennis champions? Is it facilities, resources, or inadequate finances?
Well, as I see it, the problem with tennis in Britain is the courts.
Ah, now what's wrong with the courts?
Well, they've got nets halfway across them. I mean, it's ridiculous. You hit the ball and 9 times out of 10 it hits that stupid net. And it really stops your game developing.
But surely all tennis courts all over the world have nets across them.
Oh, no, it's a real pig. Then there's those lines. I mean, they've always put those lines just inside where the ball bounces.
Uh-huh. So, Anne, how do you fancy Britain's chances against the United States in the Whiteman Cup? Anne? Anne, please don't cry. Oh. Anne.
I'm sorry, but it's just the thought of those American girls. They hit the ball over that net and then, well, you're done for, really. You know what the Americans call me? Anne Loves Six Jenkins.
Here's a hanky. It's all right.
I'm so depressed. I mean, I work at my game. I really do. Yesterday, I practiced against my garage door, and the garage door won in straight sets. I mean, I just can't go on.
Yeah, that's okay. Sit down, sit down. Don't worry. Anybody got some Valium?
Yeah, here. Take some of mine.
Oh, thanks.
Come with us on a voyage along the M25 of the unknown as we bring you yet one more in the series Tales of the Impossible. Tonight, episode 2 of The Man Who Changed.
The story so far. Nobel Prize-winning Professor Dex Hartley of Illinois is in his laboratory, having just personally tested his revolutionary energy-matter transplant system. As he steps out of the transplant chamber, his assistant expresses his doubts.
Professor, I don't think you should have tested the system yourself. It could have been dangerous.
Don't worry, Hank. The only way it could prove dangerous is if, by some extraordinary fluke, a living creature had found its way into the second transplant chamber here. Hank, how did this puppy get in here?
Search me, Professor. Is that the kind of extraordinary fluke you were talking about?
Yes, it is, rather. You realize what this means? It means I may have experienced energy-matter transference with a dog. On the other hand, I may not have. Only time will tell.
6 months pass and all seems well. Then, suddenly, one morning in April, Dex awakes to find himself in hospital, his lovely wife Susan by his side.
Don't try and move, Dex.
What happened?
Well, you were talking to Mr. Mankiewicz next door, and then just as he was going out to work, you chased his car up the drive, down the hill, you bit the postman, saw a cat, bolted across the road, and got hit by a truck. When I arrived, you were just lying there, whining pitifully.
Oh, my God!
What's wrong, Dex?
I can't tell you, Susan.
In the months that followed, Susan noticed a subtle change in Dex. She wondered in particular why Dex had suddenly become so sexually voracious, especially when he tried to copulate with her at the bus stop that time. She put his behavior down to the shock of the accident. Then, one evening at a cocktail party thrown by Mrs. Mankiewicz...
Oh, these Petit Fours are just delicious. Where did you get them?
Oh, my God!
What is it?
It's your husband!
Susan turned round.
Dex, stop that! Stop it, Dex! Someone get a bucket of cold water! Dex! Don't worry, I'll pay for the dry cleaning.
Later, back home...
Oh, Dex, I think I could have coped if it had been another woman. But to catch your husband two-timing you with a leg of a sofa...
I'm sorry, darling.
And when you clamped yourself onto Mrs. Mankiewicz's foot...
I'm sorry. Sit down, darling. I'll explain everything to woo you. Woo.
Susan sat down. Dex turned round twice and then he sat down. He explained the whole awful thing and how it would get worse.
So far, the changes have been to my behavioral pattern. Soon I will start to experience physical changes. This is what you must do. You must keep me indoors at all times. You must note down everything that happens, no matter how awful, for scientific purposes. And most important of all,
yes?
You must keep me away from Ted Schwartz's poodle. It's pedigree, and if I make it pregnant, he'll sue us for thousands of dollars.
In the months that followed, Susan faithfully recorded Dex's deterioration.
July 2nd. Dex is now walking on all fours and has lost the power of speech, except for the word rough, which makes conversations extremely difficult. It tears me apart to see this brilliant man trapped inside a body that is half human and half Yorkshire Terrier, with just a suspicion of Jack Russell, especially around the snout. August 6th. Physically, Dex is now 100% dog. Mr. Mankiewicz next door is growing suspicious, especially after he caught sight of a mongrel doing our household accounts. Yesterday was the worst day so far. Oh, hello, Mr. Schwartz. Why? What lovely puppies.
Newborn. Notice anything unusual about them, Mrs. Hartley?
How do you mean?
Now, for instance, take this one, Snowy. Got a bit of Yorkshire Terrier in him, I'd say.
Really? I can't see it myself. Aren't they cute? Distinct facial markings on that one.
You mean the beard? First time I've seen a puppy with a beard, Mrs. Hartley. First time I've seen a puppy like this black one here that can walk upright on two legs and boil the kettle. That's the first time I known a puppy fetch a newspaper home in its mouth and sit down and read it.
Next week, Susan is certified insane when she's found discussing Nietzsche with her dog, and Dex catches something nasty off a Pekingese in episode 3 of The Man Who Changed.
Announcing the Zycon Organizer 4. The new Super Deluxe Advanced Pocket Computer. It'll run your office, it'll run your home. It'll steal your cigars, drink your sherry, screw your wife, and then murder you for the insurance money. The Zycon Organizer 4. It'll solve all your problems.
And now it's time for our film review. Now, I went along to see the new James Bond movie.
Yeah? Any good?
Oh, very good, yeah. James Bond is very much the new man in capital letters, you know, more sensitive, less male macho.
Yeah.
But it's great stuff. Mm. Now, in this scene, the villain, Dr. Strom, is about to cut Bond in half with a laser.
So, Mr. Bond, in a few minutes you will be dead. My missiles will have destroyed Washington and Moscow, and I will have the whole world groveling pitifully down on its knees to me.
Hmm. Have you considered counselling at all?
What?
Counselling. It's very good for helping come to terms with your personality problems.
I haven't got a personality problem!
That's what I used to say, but I did. I used to treat women like objects. Isn't that awful? I never realised...
Shut up and prepare to die, Mr. Bond!
Hey, okay, fine. If you think you're okay...
I do, thank you. Breathe your last, 007. Listen, if I do go along to this counselling stuff, I won't feel silly now, will I?
So he goes along to counselling then, doesn't
he? Yeah. I mean, he does feel a little exposed in his counselling group, partly because they're all a lot younger than him, and partly because he's the only one with a metal claw for a hand, you know. But eventually he talks freely about his problems, and the group put it to him that maybe he's a latent homosexual.
Uh-huh. And does he accept that as valid?
Not really, no. No, he throws them to his crocodiles, actually. Oh. And then he goes after 007 again. He catches up with Bond in a bar. Mm-hmm.
Barman, carrot juice, please shake and not stirred.
So, Mr. Bond, we'll meet again.
Oh, how did the counselling go?
Shut up about the counselling. You are surrounded, Mr. Bond. Resistance is futile.
I agree.
So don't try and... What do you mean you agree?
Well, say I make my escape, killing all your men in the process. I mean, what have I really achieved?
Shut up, 007!
Isn't all violence really an admission of failure?
Shut up!
Besides, taking another's life is against my principles as a Buddhist.
Buddhist?
Yes.
James Bond, 007, licensed to kill, has become a Buddhist.
Yes.
Right, that's it!
Where are you going?
I'm going home. You've taken all the fun out of it.
I can help you find inner peace.
I'm a power-crazed psychopath. I don't want inner peace.
Just try doing this.
Shut up!
And then, right, there's this great chase scene where Bond chases the villain up Oxford Street trying to sell him some records.
It's really... Right.
And now...
Rome, the greatest empire man's ever known. The greatest civilization man's ever known. The noisiest civilization. Founded on the banks of the Tiber by the legendary twins Romulus and Remus, who were raised by a she-wolf.
Romulus?
Yes, Remus?
It's about Mum.
Yes?
Well, it's just she's not thinking of coming along to parents' evening, is she? And it's going to be so embarrassing. All the other kids will tease us on account of being in a wolf parent family, won't they?
Well, she is our mum.
Oh, I know, but look how she showed us up last time. Ripped off the music teacher's head. I didn't know where to look.
No, neither did he.
Romulus and Remus grew strong. And in the year 753 BC, they built a great and mighty city.
Well, Romulus.
Yes, Remus.
We have built a great and mighty city. And that city shall be known as Reem.
Reem?
Yes, Reem, home of the Reemans.
You make me sick, Remus. You've always got to have it your way. City named after you. I did all the work, built the whole bloody city.
I did the grouting.
Oh, brilliant!
Look, there is no point in arguing. We've got to get on and pebble-dash the forum.
For the last time, we are not pebble-dashing the forum.
It'll look very nice.
If we are going to conquer the world, we are not having your...
Romulus settled the dispute in the time-honoured Roman fashion of killing his brother. Rome began to grow and prosper, until across the sea, in mighty Carthage, Hannibal planned his attack.
So, mighty Hannibal, you have a plan to destroy Rome.
Indeed. We will stage a surprise attack on Rome, descending from the north.
A magnificent strategy. Superb.
How shall we cross the Alps?
We shall cross the Alps on elephants.
Elephants?
Yes, the Romans wouldn't expect us to do that.
Oh, I don't think anyone would, really.
Are you sure you don't mean horses?
No, elephants, the big grey things with the long wobbly noses.
Yes. They're not renowned for nimbly skipping along mountain passes, are they?
Not yet. But we'll train them.
That winter, as Hannibal's army crossed the Alps...
The training doesn't seem to be paying off, does it?
Give them a chance. It's only the first week. Oh, dear. There goes Jumbo. He was my favourite.
And so the Carthaginian army pressed on towards Rome, and it was 5 long years before they realised Hannibal was on drugs. In 55 BC, Julius Caesar colonised Britain. No one knows why. The ancient Briton chieftains held a conference of war to discuss tactics.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one way to do it. Just get out there and get stalking. What do you think, Chaloney?
Well, what I think we should do, you know, play to our strengths for me.
He's dead right, Desmond. The way we're going to deal with these namby-pamby continentals, we've got to get out there, get in there, then go and do it.
For me, Lloyd, there's no other way.
And we're going to go out and do it.
The British were massacred. Caesar returned to Rome. He had given the Romans a new colony, Britain, and to show their appreciation, they assassinated him. Then came the Emperor Augustus and the Augustan Age, the age of Virgil, Horace, Ovid, Livy, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Tick. The age where superb temples were built to the gods. Diana, god of hunting, Venus, god of love, and Mars, god of work, rest and play. After Augustus came Tiberius. After Tiberius came Caligula, who made a horse his consul. It's often said that Caligula was mad, but he wasn't. He interviewed lots of horses for the post first.
until he was absolutely sure he'd got the right one for the job. Most infamous of the emperors was Nero.
Mighty Nero, you summoned me.
Yes, Camillus.
Nero, why have you got out that old fire insurance policy?
Oh, no reason, just checking it, you know. Now, Camillus, my chief advisor, Bernard Ingemus, tells me I must persecute these Christians.
Indeed, I have brought some of these wretched Christians with me. Bring them in!
So, these are Christians, eh?
You must throw them to the lions, Nero.
No, no, Camillus, I will spare them. They seem harmless enough.
Someone's crying, my lord, kumbaya.
Get the lions ready. And burn those cable-knit sweaters, okay?
Many emperors followed Nero, but perhaps the greatest emperor of all was Constantine the Great, who converted the whole of Rome to Christianity just to get rid of a pair of Jehovah's Witnesses. In the centuries that followed, Rome declined into decadence, decay, debauchery, and lots of things beginning with D. Rome was invaded by a succession of barbaric tribes.
Here we go.
Tribes like the Goths, the Visigoths, the Vandals, the Visivandals, the not-so-Visivandals, the very busy but better that way than too quiet Vandals. The Huns, the Gauls, the Franks, the Dereks, the Garys, the Wanes, all ultimately destroyed. The glory, that was Rome.
Well, that's all for tonight. Next week we'll be meeting the Moorfield surgeon who, before the election, performed delicate surgery on Mrs. Thatcher's eye to remove a mad glint from it.
And Clive James will be here telling us about his two forthcoming TV series. One about the crass, prurient broadcasting standards of the Japanese, the other about girls with big tits who pose for Pirelli calendars. Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Harry Enfield. The show was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.